This episode of Blue Shirts Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. That's right. Go to patreon.com/blueshirtsbreakaway today to get access to our ad-free episodes, our BSBOTs that come out once a week, our Discord, and much, much more. And you get to support this podcast where we talk about this crazy old Ranger team all year round. You get to yell at me, too, which is super fun. We have Hope on today. She talks about the Wolf Pack because we decided maybe it's good to learn about a team that's not the Rangers after the last week. And then Greg and I talk about Mika Zibanejad, the slump, what's gone wrong, what's gone right, how he's still a little positive and I'm less so, which feels weird because I'm usually the positive one. So without further ado, here is Mark Messier, and let's get to the show.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Bushers Breakaway fans, welcome to look at the Bushers Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead, and the Rangers have stopped the bleeding. Gregory, how are you? Say hello.
I'm so happy to be out of Georgia. Not that I'm happy to be back in the cold, but 10 days with your parents, man. Oh boy.
I like my mom a lot. I hope she's doing well. 10 days is a lot.
10 days is too much.
That's a lot.
I was supposed to be doing other things while I was down there, and people just kept getting sick of me, or just sick in general.
Easy to do.
I get it. I live with this 24/7 and I hate it. So, but yeah, we were joking before we started recording, I created a prospect ranking formula for our fantasy baseball league. That's how much free time I had down in Georgia. I created a statistic.
That's insane and totally sickening. And to be honest, better than watching the Rangers. Good transition. Did you stay up for the Thursday game? I did, and what a regret that was.
I think I called it after the second period.
And you did the right thing. I stayed up for the entirety of Golden Knights Rangers, a game where they were missing Jack Eichel and missing most of their players, and proceeded to stomp the Rangers in a way that was very unkind. The team didn't really play well at all. Looked lethargic. Looked Vegas flu-y. Is that appropriate to say? Can I say that?
I don't think they looked. The first 10 minutes were electric. They looked great.
They were unbelievable.
If the hockey game was only 10 minutes long and you didn't need to score a goal in order to win, the New York Rangers would have won.
As soon as they were denied multiple times by the backup goalie, who I can't even remember his name for the Golden Knights, who just played out of his goddamn mind.
Wasn't it Logan Thompson?
It was, I think. No, was it?
Wasn't it?
Might have not been. I think it's the backup to Logan Thompson.
It's that he starts with the B guy?
I'm going to get it right now. Oh, it was Logan Thompson. Anyway.
Okay, thank you. I'm better at this.
Good job. Logan Thompson. Yes, you are. Logan Thompson made a couple of great stops, and it looked like the Rangers just gave up. They just were like, we're done here. And then that was it. Then Saturday, versus the Kings, stayed up for this one as well, went to the bar, did the whole thing. I thought they played a way better game. The defensive kind of stops started to come. They really slowed everything down. It looked like they got more back to the 1-3-1 system, and they started to figure it out. Unfortunately, they couldn't score for their life of them. I think Lafreniere right now is as snake bitten as I've seen a player in a long time. He's creating so many chances. I think it was Valiquette who said he has like plus 11 expected goal value, but he just hasn't scored on any of them because he just can't finish, or our goalie makes an amazing save. And in this game, that happened yet again. They had a 6-4 opportunity. He couldn't put it away. I'm not putting this all on Lafreniere, but it was just a miserable loss against a Kings team who was 1-5-4 in their last 10. Jonathan Quick couldn't get it done, got the tribute video. And then against the Ducks, just to recap the week here, down 1-0 early, down 2-0 even out soon after that, and then score 5 straight unanswered to beat a bad Ducks team and stop an apocalypse on Rangers Twitter and online. a literal apocalypse. But I think you and I have come on to bring this all full circle here to get into our full conversation. We have been really, really nice to the Rangers this year. Incredibly nice. There's a lot of times we come on the show and say, there's nothing to complain about. You don't have to panic. This team's good. There's been a lot of flaws exposed over the last couple of weeks. Some of it starts with coaching, and some of it starts with the breakdown of the structure that Laviolette was putting in. You saw him trying to put that structure back in the Kings game and most parts of the Ducks game. Some of it comes with the snake bittenness of this team, injuries, etc. But there was, for the first time this season, even when Trocheck scored that first goal against the Ducks, I was like, man, this is nice, but I am legitimately concerned about a lot of what is going on.
Here's a sentence I never thought I would ever say in my life. So I was talking to Emerson Edom on Saturday.
This is ridiculous. How did this happen?
He DM'd me. I don't know what to tell you. But I'd mentioned to Emerson, because I can call him that. We're good friends now.
I think we have an Emerson Edom emergency podcast from like 5 years ago.
We probably do. I mentioned to him if the Rangers lost to the Kings that he might be seeing riotous behavior on the streets of New York, and it was close. First of all, I'll start here. I'm still not concerned, buddy. I got bad news for you. I'm not there. I'm just not. Because you said there are a lot of problems. I'm hearing an echo on your end. I don't know what that's all about.
On my end?
Yeah, whatever. Screw it. I'm just pointing it out so that no one in the comments points it out first.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'm going to lower my mic. Continue.
Anyway, I don't think there are flaws with this Rangers team as much as it is that the Rangers just aren't playing well. Because to me, a flaw would mean there's something the Rangers can't correct on their own, or that they need outside help, or that there's something critically wrong with the infrastructure inside the machine that is the New York Rangers. I don't think that's the case. I do think a lot of players are all playing poorly at the exact same time, which is for sure a problem. But I don't think, like, adding Jake Guentzel to this team is not going to make them significantly better or solve, quote unquote, whatever's ailing this team. Adding a guy like Elias Lindholm, it's not going to fix the New York Rangers.
Not having a great year, by the way. Yeah.
Right. The outside pieces aren't going to fix the New York Rangers. The New York Rangers need to fix the New York Rangers because the problems are all right here. You can go. Chris Kreider needed a good game, man. It had been a while, so thank God he had one against the Ducks. Mika Zibanejad still looking for a good game. We're entering week three of whatever his latest slump is. Adam Fox had been skittish up until the Duck game. He needed a good game. This team essentially has been a one-line team with no goaltending for the better part of a month. But that means Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider are playing poorly. That means their defensive pairing, specifically Miller and Trouba, have taken a step back, and that means Igor Shesterkin is not playing good hockey. But trading four guys will not make Igor Shesterkin magically play better hockey. He just needs to do it. That man needs a bye week like no human being has ever needed a bye week in his life.
Got bad news, because they're going to send him down to a skills competition where they're going to throw pucks at him for no reason.
Yeah, but then they have, I think the Rangers bye coincides with the All-Star break, so it's a glorified 10 days off for Igor, and as long as he doesn't spend it with Fred and Peggy Kaplan, he's going to be more than fine. I want to talk about how we blame things, though, when we watch sporting events, because I fired off a tweet Saturday night. Oof of Twitter misread it at first. So let me clarify one thing here. I do not think Keandre Miller and Francisco Lindor are equally talented. That is,
I also thought it was ridiculous that people thought that. So
I don't know how else to word that tweet, but whatever. Met fans who don't like me because of I don't like how they're Met fans will take any opportunity they can get to be like, oh, that's ridiculous. I love that there is a big group of Met fans out there to think Francisco Lindor is on a Hall of Fame path. God bless you. But I also think of those Met fans that don't understand that what I'm saying is there's a group of the Met fan base that will blame for Francisco Lindor is not allowed to have a slump. There are some players on every team over the course of history that are allowed to slump and aren't allowed to slump. Brandon Nimmo, he can slump because he gives the impression that he's trying every night. Francisco Lindor cannot slump. The first player I ever experienced this with was Carlos Beltran. Carlos Beltran was not allowed to slump, but other players on that Met team were. I had a good example. Cliff Floyd was allowed to slump on the 2006 New York Mets. Carlos Beltran, not so much. And it's not that the Mets obviously would be a much significantly different and worse team when Carlos Beltran wasn't playing to his abilities. But it's you deal with that slump because you know when he's at his apex, it's unbelievable. And that same thing with Lindor. We have friends in our life who text me and then text our group chat that Francisco Lindor stinks when he goes on a 180 three-week binge in June. I get it every year. And it's because they forget that, one, he's human, he's going to slump, and two, how great he is when he's at his fullest. I made this tweet in relation to Keandre Miller because I feel like I'm not saying he's an all-star. I'm not saying he's been a beacon of consistency throughout his career. I am saying we forget when he's right how electric he is on the ice. He's clearly not right now. And if you want to point that out and you want to criticize specific parts of his game, I'm open to having that conversation. I'm not calling you dumb for thinking Keandre Miller isn't playing his best hockey right now.
You're
right. It's clear that he isn't. But to act like he's always been a problem, you are projecting something there that I don't know what that is. And you have a problem with him as a hockey player in general where you don't think he's ever been good. And that's ridiculous to me. The New York Rangers lost to the LA Kings on Saturday 2-1. They didn't lose that game. The second goal is Keandre Miller's fault, but they didn't lose that game because they allowed a second goal. They lost that game because they scored one. That's why they lost. This is, Ryan, if this, I'm about to bring it up. If this sounds familiar to you, it's because the Tampa Bay Rays didn't lose the World Series because they took Blake Snell out of the game. They lost because they scored one run.
The Bills didn't lose to the Chiefs because multiple wide receivers dropped the ball that Josh Allen threw. They lost because they couldn't stop Patrick Mahomes.
Well, the Bills didn't lose that game yesterday, not because they missed the field goal, but because they couldn't stop Patrick Mahomes.
That's it.
And the 2006 New York Mets didn't lose Game 7 of the National League Championship Series because Carlos Beltran, while the Mets were already losing, took a curveball for called strike 3 to end the game. They lost the game because in the bottom of the sixth inning, Jose Valentin, with less than two outs and the bases loaded, shook out and couldn't score an extra run. Mets scored one run in 2006. That's why they lost. You react to the most obvious thing that happened without reacting to the thing that actually happened. Yeah, Keandre Miller made a mistake in the neutral zone and then got burnt in his own end, and then got burnt a second time when he tried to kill the puck under Jonathan Quick, but instead put it out in front of the goal mouth in enough space for Quinton Byfield to come in and score. That is the exact play that caused the second goal from scoring. But the New York Rangers only scored once against the LA Kings, who have been playing some of their worst hockey all year. That's why they lost. They didn't lose because of one individual play. They lost because for 60 minutes, the Kings shut them down.
Yeah, and the power play was toothless again as well. Sam Rosen was really apt to tell you that the Kings had the best penalty kill in the league over and over again. So there you go. They weren't able to get it. I'm with you. I'm not big on blame Keandre. I'm also not big on pointing to Vince wrote a really great article about Keandre's mental health. If you want to go check that out, you know where to find Vince. You've listened to this podcast. He's been on a million times. And blaming mental health is freaking crazy to me. It's like absolutely out of this world. Like, yeah, the guy talked about it, but guys, everyone has mental issues. Like literally everybody. Everyone deals with stuff. I don't know how often people want to talk about it. I don't really care. It's your own personal thing. To say like he should sit until it's figured it out, that's also nuts. He is a very, very good hockey player who is expressing what he's going through right now and what he's going through in the transition. Not only that, but he's asked to play a different role on this team than he was in the past. And so for people that come out and tell me, and I'm trying not to straw man here, but I've just had a lot of Keandre Miller comments where, hey, he hasn't been good all year. Like, what are you talking about? Trouba and Miller were insane when Fox was out and Igor was out. When Quick was starting all these games, Trouba and Miller were legitimately playing shutdown defensive hockey. Their numbers were great. The stats were great. Everything, the eye test was there. They looked electric. And then something happened. And I don't know what that something is. Keandre took a couple games off. Trouba has a kid, is now a father. And I'm not blaming any of these things on their diminished play. But there was a switch that happened. And since that switch, that second pairing has been exposed in a huge way. This is when I talk about their game. Trouba has gotten beat multiple times. He's looked a little bit slower recently. I don't know if he's playing injured. Ever since he kind of left, I think he left a game once after taking a hit. Since that game, he has not really been the same player he was at the beginning of the season. Keandre Miller, something very similar. just making simple mistakes, is getting left out, is getting burnt, is not in right position. And those are all true. Those are all things you can say about Trouba and Miller. They're both not playing great hockey right now. Combine that with what you said earlier, Greg. Igor Shesterkin is not playing his best hockey as a New York Ranger, probably. And statistically, his worst hockey as a New York Ranger. And you end up in the situation where the Rangers had lost, I think, 7 of the last 10. But now they've won 3 of the last 5. You can make the stats say what you want. Both those players have been exposed. But I'm not going to sit here and say the reason why Keandre Miller is struggling is because of his mental health. That is freaking crazy.
I don't know why he's struggling. It's probably a huge amount of factors all cresting at the same head of the river. And I hope he figures it out, because it's going to be super important for the New York Rangers when it comes playoff time, for what has historically been the Rangers in terms of ice time at 5v5, number one defensive pairing for the last 2 years. It's Jacob Trouba and Keandre Miller. They get the tough assignments. They get more minutes. They're out there with the higher lines on the Rangers on a nightly basis. They need to be right if this Ranger team wants to go somewhere. The difference between me and the people that are doom scrolling right now is I think they're going to be right. I think this is simply one of those times, one of those periods in a long 6, 7, 8 month season where it's just worse than it should be. The New York Rangers are not a hockey team that's going to win 18 of 22 every 22 games. They're also not a hockey team that's only going to win 12 of 24 every 24 hockey games. The true New York Rangers are somewhere in the middle, which puts them at about a 65% point pace, which is where they happen to be right now. It is ugly how it's gotten here, for sure. I'm not enjoying it. These games are less fun. It's one of the, if I had to rank it, I know it's a reaction to the now, and I know we're overreacting to how things feel right now, but in our 9 years, considering the expectations we had for the Rangers and how well they were playing earlier in the season, this has got to be one of the 5 least fun moments in terms of where we are on the calendar that is outside of a playoffs.
Top one and two were playoff losses. So yeah.
Outside of a playoffs in the regular season, you go back 2 months ago, we come on this podcast being like, if you had to choose a Ranger, gun to your head, that's not playing well, who'd you say? And we'd be like, I don't know, Tyler Pitlick. Like it was a joke. We'd come on here all laughs and smiles, having a good time. The way we are reacting to these losses, sometimes us, a lot of times other people, has made being a fan so much less fun. Like I'm out of ways to describe to people how this is just a moment in time where they're playing poorly, and it's not necessarily indicative of what's about to happen. If it is an indication of what's about to happen, and you want to come back to me and point in my face and yell and scream and say, I told you so, good for you. But I just still have nothing to say that this stretch the current Rangers are in is going to continue for weeks upon end. This is just what happens in the middle of hockey seasons. Every good team has a down period, except the Boston Bruins last year, who lost in the first round of the playoffs. This shit happens. I'd rather it happen now so we figure out what the fuck's happening and you fix it.
Last January was the same thing. Disaster.
Last January, there was a Blues game where if the Rangers lost, Gerard Gallant was getting fired. Like, that's what was happening.
Wish we lost that game.
Yeah. Ryan, it's just like, I hate doing this, but compare your problems as a Ranger fan to other teams' problems. You'd rather be the Devils right now?
No.
Luke Hughes stinks. They have no goaltending. Jack Hughes is hurt. They're having fights about their fourth-line winger who gets 9 minutes a night, seemingly scores every night, and then the coaches bemoan the fucking beat reporter because he doesn't know how to watch the game. You'd rather be the Hurricanes? Hurricanes were supposed to be the best team in this division, and they don't have a fucking goalie. Would you honestly rather be the Flyers? Would you rather us be on this show having this great unexpected season where we're doing great, but then our number one prospect said, you know what you should do? Go fuck yourself, and I'm getting the fuck out of here. Like, imagine the Rangers had this young core, this up-and-coming core, and then Gabe Perreault suddenly said, why don't you eat shit and trade me to fucking San Jose?
I would hate that.
Be fucking miserable.
I would be miserable. Honestly, the whole Metropolitan is miserable right now, and the Rangers still have a 4-point lead.
Even the Capitals, who are playing better than anyone expected them to play this year. If you told Capitals fans you had to choose between potentially being a wild card team and just getting to enjoy Alex Ovechkin in the twilight of his career, they'd say Alex Ovechkin in the twilight of his career. He blows. He's awful this year. Everybody has problems, guys. Your problems are not bigger than other people's problems. In fact, your problems are easier to fix because all you're really asking is for your players to play like we know how they play.
I think a part of it is the coaching staff as well. First time I'll be critical of Laviolette all year long.
I disagree.
Really?
What is he supposed to do?
Is he supposed
to go on ice and tell Mika Zibanejad to get the stick out of his ass?
That's part of it. Part of it is like figuring out actually enforcing the structure that is breaking down every single game.
But how do you enforce it, Ryan? Like, how many Rangers do you bench before they get the picture?
Well, first of all, I think we should probably talk about the benching. Kapokako was not a benching. That was not a thing.
The flow of the game got away from the Rangers, where everything was a fucking either man advantage or penalty kill.
Yeah, and it was like trying to figure out a way to spark the team. It was not a benching situation for Kapokako, who just came off a long-term injury. Not what it was.
No, and again, it's tough for people to hear this, but I know I'm hard on Mika Zibanejad, and I know it's partly because of how awful I thought he played in the playoffs last year. And I know he got off to a hard, hard start this season where things didn't go well. And I get that a lot of problems are. I am not doing the thing with Mika Zibanejad that I just bitch and moaned people do with Keandre Miller, because I think Mika Zibanejad is going to be fine. But if I need to get Mika Zibanejad going, the way you get Zibanejad going is not by sitting him to play Trocheck more, to play Bonino more, to play Goodrow more. The way to get Zibanejad going is by trying everything fucking possible to get him to score a goddamn goal. And sometimes that means having Kapokako sit down for a second and try him with Jimmy fucking Vesey. Because you just got to try fucking everything.
It's galore here.
I'm so tired. I'm hungry, haven't eaten, and I'm fucking tired of the bullshit going on. But that's what you just have to do. It's not like the last thing Laviolette wants to do is break up Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere. And why would he? It's the one line working. At the same time, he's got no choice but to double shift Panarin with Zibanejad, because for the love of God, Mika, we're asking you to get going. I truly don't know what else Laviolette can do, because I've never believed in order to get someone going, you take them off the ice. You have to find them more ice time in the middle of really difficult times in order to get a player out of his funk. A player in a shooting slump doesn't suddenly get out of the shooting slump by stopping his shooting. He has to shoot more. And the only way you're going to do that is if you try every combination humanly possible with Mika Zibanejad. And that's what Laviolette did over the weekend. He tried fucking everything.
He did. It's not really Mika Zibanejad that I'm focusing on here. There's just a lot of times where the breakaway thing is still an issue to me. Yeah, and the letting up two goals in under 2 minutes or 4 minutes stat, it's still there. There's something there that needs to be coached out of this team. It's not my job to figure out how to do it. It's Laviolette's job. But I think they're last in the league on allowing breakaways and high scoring chances on those breakaways. And I also think I definitely know they lead the league in letting up two goals in under 4 minutes. That's for sure. So those are the two things that needs to be ironed out of this team on top of everything you just said. The players outside of Artemi Panarin, they're not doing what they need to be doing. They're not doing their job. They're not playing at that high level.
Tom Ertz shared an interesting stat. I think last week or the week before, I think it was last week in our insider channel, where Igor Shesterkin's save percentage is at its worst when he allows the Rangers to fall down by two goals. So in situations in which the Rangers are currently trailing by two, which is, I feel like, every situation where the Rangers allow back-to-back goals, that is when Igor Shesterkin's save percentage is at its worst. At the same time, the on-ice impact of the forwards and defensemen, the Rangers have played their best team defense in all situations when they are down by two goals. So, again, I get it. You're asking this coaching staff to coach certain things out of these players. I don't know how you coach this team that plays great defense when they're down two goals because they know they're going to have a hard time coming back from three, and they are doing that, but the goalie isn't stopping the puck. Like, at some point, the odd man rushes, you notice them more because the goalies aren't saving them. I'm not asking Igor Shesterkin to become superhuman. I'm simply asking him to become Igor Shesterkin. I just don't think – I don't think there's anything Benoit Allaire, of all people, can do to make Igor Shesterkin be Igor Shesterkin. At some point, we once again – we I went on this rant last year, Ryan. When can we just be angry at the players again? Why does it always have to be someone else's fault? At some point, it's the players' fault. And we're at that point. If the Rangers want to play better, all they have to do is fucking play better. That's it.
Let's talk about playing better. Will Cooley decided that he was going to play better last night.
Mm-hmm.
And Will Cooley's a player that we've mentioned a little bit on this show this season. But when the chips were down and things weren't looking so good, Will Cooley, not sure how he didn't get the Broadway hat, even though everybody in the room questioned Igor Shesterkin when he gave it to Adam Fox. It was very funny. Will Cooley not only scores a goal, but then draws a penalty, which allows Panarin to go on the power play and score on the power play. Will Cooley, I know we've been saying it kind of all year, that guy's a 16-game player. And the more we talk about it with our guest Hope today, about his time in the Hartford Wolfpack, but Cooley, man, he's just a guy I really, really, really see being a big part of this Ranger team for a long time. He just does all the right things for a bottom six guy. And in that moment, like I hope we look back on that moment in 2 weeks and go, that was the moment this team got right again.
You're saying Will Cooley is the helmet throw this year?
That's it. The Will Cooley penalty draw.
Interesting. Yeah,
Cooley's how many great. Comments do you get about this team needs a helmet throw?
Oh, dude, they won't fucking day. Stop.
It's crazy.
It won't stop. You can't force the moment. The moment is only the moment in hindsight. Maybe we are all smarter and we think this Will Cooley moment will be the moment. And if we do, shout out to everyone who said it. I'm not one who said it. I'm not going to lie. I didn't watch a lot of last night's game. I don't know if you guys noticed. There's really good football on. And people have been miserable pricks with the New York Rangers recently. I just watch really good football.
I watched really good football and I second screened the Rangers, and then really good football ended and I full screened the Rangers.
I turned the Rangers on full once the football game ended. And all I'm saying is that's when they scored five goals.
Nice
so
job.
You're welcome.
Nice job.
Is the moment Greg turning the game on, or is the moment Will Cooley? Let's ask these questions.
It makes you think. All right. Cooley.
To finish on Cooley, he's been wonderful. Good teams. We've talked about this ad nauseum too in other years. What makes good teams great is finding the Will Cooley. It's not just throwing endless bottom six retreads into your lineup and hoping one of them sticks. It's great when one does, like Jimmy Vesey and, frankly, Tyler Pitlick. But what you really need to be a sustainable, long-term, great winner is continuing to churn Will Cooleys. Just finding these guys that bring that little something different to the lineup. It's not that other guys don't throw their weight around like Will Cooley. It's not like other guys can't draw penalties. It's just that Will Cooley, getting him to do it in the minutes that he plays, it means the other team can't fucking rest against you at any point in time. It forces them to be awake for an extra shift where maybe previously they thought they could sit back, just let the game flow, and not have to stress about those 45 seconds on the ice. Will Cooley's on the ice, you know it. And he's there, and he puts it in your face. And he does the dirty things. And you just need guys like that
to come out of nowhere. Do the dirty thing, guys. And he is the example of that. Like, Goodrow obviously is another one of those do the dirty thing guys, but Cooley just has a lot more jam in his game, mostly because of his age as well.
I don't know. I don't think it's a matter of jam. It's just when other teams see Barclay Goodrow, they have that expectation. And mm-hmm. Will Cooley hasn't been in this league long enough for teams to have expectations for him. So when Cooley does it, it's catching people off guard. They don't know. It takes them a minute to recalibrate and react to it. And the minute it takes them to recalibrate and react to it, you're now getting that minute back as an advantage for your team.
Let's get to our interview with Hope. She covers the Hartford Wolfpack, and then we'll come back and answer some five-star questions. Transition. Hey, yo, I'm here to tell you about the official ticket sponsor of this podcast. That's right, it is TickPick. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my TickPick experience from this weekend. You see, there's an event in Philadelphia where I happen to live called WrestleMania 40. Now, I've been a big wrestling fan my whole life. I follow on and off. I always watch the Royal Rumble. I always watch WrestleMania. I'm subscribed to the subreddit, whole thing. But I decided I'm going to WrestleMania this year. No questions asked. What did I do? I went to TickPick. I looked for the best deals. I found tickets $100 cheaper very quickly in a good section because of TickPick. It rated them by the best deal. I sorted by price. I was like, those seats kind of, no, they're obstructed view. I'm not going to do that. I got the best deal. I'm sitting in the 100 section. It's $100 cheaper than everywhere else. I looked on other websites, and when I went to checkout, the fees were crazy. The price I saw was the price I got on TickPick. And you want to know the even more baller move that I did? That's right. I used my own promo code to buy this ticket from TickPick. What's that promo code? It's BlueShirts15. And you could check out anytime with BlueShirts15. Use the promo code and you get $15 off any order over $99. I used it on WrestleMania. You can do it too. So use BlueShirts15 if you want to go to Ranger Games or anything else. I'll be at WrestleMania this year, loving it. And you can go ahead and use that promo code BlueShirts15. And maybe I'll see you there. Let me know if you're going. All right, back to the show. Hey, we're back with our first guest of the day. We have Hope Drew. She's covering the Wolfpack for fun these days. Hope, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Really, really appreciate you taking the time. We thought the Rangers were so bad recently that it might be good to talk about the Wolfpack and what's gone on for this season. But before we get to the Wolfpack, can you talk a little bit about what you saw with Will Cooley last year and why it does or does not surprise you that what he's doing with the New York Rangers this year?
Yeah, I mean, last season, he kind of started off slow. I think that's pretty usual for anyone making the transition from juniors to the AHL. We saw it with Brennan a little bit. But once he consistently started playing with Johnny Brodzinski and had like that mentor in place on his line all the time, you could just tell that he knew exactly what was expected of him. And then he was getting power play time, and you could just see him settle into his game because he knew the role he needed to play every night.
I hope you're still there.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you cut off. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I was like, whoa, hold on. It's like
it did with the inflection be like, all right, Hope's got another point. And then like it just stopped. And I was like, well, there we go. All right.
I was like, and that's why he's a badass. I was like, that's what she's waiting to say. I agree with you on the whole Cooley point where it just seems like it's a guy. And maybe you could tell me if you disagree here, Hope. It just seems like he's a guy that's going to be a bottom six player for maybe the next decade for the Rangers. And it's just come so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I retweeted my post from last January right after he had gotten his, like, four-game call-up to the NHL that, like, he was going to be a perfect bottom six player. Like, he reminds me a lot of Jesper Foss. Like, can slot up in the top six if needed, like, injuries, but he is the perfect bottom six player. He can play even on the right. He used to do that a little bit in Hartford, mostly just when they had like injuries during games. But he sees the ice so well. And because he's such a physical player, he can control play and let whoever he's playing with, whether it be like someone like Johnny or Jimmy, do whatever they need to.
Makes sense. So can we talk a little bit about Brennan Othman? Because he obviously came up to the Rangers this year. I would say he had a three-game appetizer. Let's call it an appetizer, right? Where he just looked, I thought he looked really good against Chicago, but to be fair to Chicago, most of them are AHL players as well. Not a shot at them, just kind of what's going on over at that point in time. And then he sort of was buried and sent back down. Were you impressed by his little stint up at New York Rangers and what has he really shown maybe at the Hartford level?
Yeah, I think when he got like the correct amount of ice time in that first game, he looked like he usually does, then it kind of was a little disappointing that he was only getting a couple minutes, like one or two shifts per period the other two games. But like after his slow start in Hartford, he's done pretty well, even with the amount of call-ups and injuries they've had, which has made like the top six in Hartford basically being juggled every night. He's still been able to play the way he needs to. I will say he struggled a little right before his call-up, but since he went back to Hartford, he's been really good.
Has there been a particular moment that stood out with you with Othman from that maybe return that says, okay, this is the NHL player that we really all can kind of see? Because I think prospect people just in general are kind of mixed on Brendan Othman. Obviously, every single Ranger fan is super hyped up on him, and mostly because he was the number one prospect in the system before Gabe Perreault arrived. But has there been like a moment where a lot of prospect people say he has a very elite shot, or he's obviously got a great motor? Has there been a moment where he maybe won a game or made a play that really stuck out to you?
I wouldn't say there's been one in like since he got back from the NHL, but in general, when he plays his game, like the physical kind of like pushing the other players around, starting like drama, basically, that's when he plays his best. I noticed like games against like the Phantoms or the Hershey Bears, like he does well in those games because they give it right back to him, and I think that he feels more comfortable like that. And then other certain games, he just looks a little like cautious, like he thinks that if he tries anything physical, like he'll get hit or something, like, or start a fight. And Johnny was pretty good when he was still down in Hartford about like controlling Brennan, like making sure he didn't go too far. But now that they don't have as much like veteran presence in the lineup, I think he's like being a little more careful like what he's doing, because he doesn't want to get himself hurt in a fight when he's better playing.
How is it possible he can get himself hurt when the gargantuan Matt Rempe is standing right there? Like, yeah, shouldn't he just have a human shield in form of Rempe?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Matt is they're like almost never on the ice together, and Matt has to be a little careful. I don't think the AHL has the 10-game fight rule anymore that they had a few years ago. But he did get an instigator recently, and if he gets three of those, he'll get a 3-game suspension if he starts another fight. So, I mean, I think Matt is like a great part of the lineup, but I also think that Bobby Trevino, which seems weird because he's so small, is also that same type of player. Like, if he sees that someone's going after like Brennan or something, he'll get on the ice and he'll be like, okay, you want to go?
The biggest thing that happened in Hartford this year is they lost their coach. Chris Knobloch has gone to Edmonton. Doesn't seem like they've lost since he's got there. Whether that's Knobloch, whether that's Connor McDavid being healthy, we can write a book based on what we want to give credit to there. But what's the impact you've seen at Hartford with Knobloch being out and Steve Smith being in?
I would say I don't see that much of a difference. Steve was always pretty hands-on. And most of the players have said that like the transition has been pretty smooth because Steve was always involved in like everything that Chris did. So I think the injuries and call-ups have had more of an effect on like the slump that they went through in December than the coaching change, because their penalty kill is still really good. Their power play is still really good, even with all the lineup changes and with the losses, they were still doing really well.
So one thing I think that a lot of people do know, that maybe everyone that follows the Rangers knows about the AHL, knows about Hartford. Can you where are they in the standings currently? I know last year they made a really big deep playoff run. what about this team? What does this team need to do to kind of make that again this year?
I believe they are fourth in the division. I think they might be 13th overall, but the AHL right now is like, I think there's like maybe 4 points between like fifth or sixth and 13th. So everything's really close, and the Wolfpack have played a lot less games, like 4 or 5 less than most of the teams in their division. So they can make up the difference pretty easily. The only one they're not going to catch is the Hershey Bears. But basically, I think they just need to stay healthy. I mean, we've seen it with the Rangers. That can make a lot of difference. And for a while, they had to like switch around the wingers and the centers because all the centers were getting hurt or called up. But they've looked much better in the past few games. They beat the Hershey Bears, which I didn't expect. They lost their next matchup against them, but they've looked much better since getting healthy. Riley Nash did get injured again, but I think once they have the like more even veteran rookie divide, like they'll settle back into what they were doing in November, which was winning a lot.
There are obviously a lot of guys on defense and Dylan Grand in goal that I want to talk about, but I think the guy that surprised the most, simply because I don't think any of us, if anybody said they had an expectation that Adam Edstrom could play a role at the NHL level for the New York Rangers, they'd just be lying to your face. What exactly has he done this year in your eyes that has it's tough to say increased his stock, because we're still talking about a guy that's probably going to live in the bottom six if he ever has an NHL career number. But he's gone from just being organizational filler to potentially able-bodied NHL regular.
Yeah, he was definitely surprising to me, seeing as last season him and Matt Rempe were almost always the extra forwards. But he is just insane on the penalty kill. Like, I think that's really what has like given him the role he has in Hartford, which is usually he's in the top six. Him and Sikora are insane on the penalty kill. Like, I swear, sometimes I am like, they're going to score. And like, they're doing better than our power play. He sees the ice so well, and like, surprisingly great skater, especially for his height. And I think that's what a lot of opponents of the Wolfpack like don't realize when they're on the ice with him, is that like, he is a great skater. So like, you make one mistake and he's down the ice in like 2 seconds.
I want to talk about Matthew Roberts in a second, because I'm a big fan of his. But how much does this team miss Johnny Brozinski, who seemingly has kind of held a spot and might keep holding a spot on the New York Rangers team?
They miss him a lot. I think it's a good thing that they got so many veterans this offseason, because I think that they would have been absolutely lost if Johnny had been called up and they didn't have the likes of Nash and Belzile and now Anisimov. Like, they rely on him so much, and he's like what Brennan joked about. He's basically team dad. They call him a teddy bear. Like, he's the person that they can go to when they're struggling, and he knows how to talk to the rookies and like show them like, hey, you know, you might need to like take it easy or do this, do that. And I think he like bridged a lot of the communication between the coaching staff and the younger guys, which helped, you know, them not be as scared, especially when they're not doing too well. I know Will talked about it last year. Like, you know, it can be scary when you're not playing well. Like, you think you're going to get in trouble with the coaching staff, but having like a leader like Johnny that can be like, hey, don't worry about it. Just like play your game, focus on yourself. Don't focus on what they're doing or that someone's going to take your spot. Like, just do what you need to do. And I think he's been doing that in New York too. Whenever they have these rookies called up, you know, Brennan praised him so much when he got called up. So it just goes to show like how much he means to these kids, basically.
He's like, he's like their on-ice father. Yeah.
Yeah.
How is Uncle Artem? I'm so happy he's back.
I'm torn. He looked great in his first game. I don't know if it's just like how the team's been doing in general, but he's been basically invisible the last couple of games. Like, I almost forgot he was there. He's centering the second line, I think. But like, sometimes I don't even realize he's on the ice. I know he played in Lehigh Valley last year, I think. And he looked great there. I don't know if it's just readjusting to like the coaching or whatever. But he struggled a bit. I think they'll probably keep him on for the length of the PTO, which is like 25 games, I believe. But I don't know that he's going to get a contract.
Not the best news when you can say, I don't really notice this guy on the ice.
Yeah.
Kind of, it might be one of those keep getting them checks situations. So happy for him, and I'm happy he still has ties to the organization. But I do want to go back to Matthew Robertson, who I think is sort of next defenseman up. Not that the Rangers are lacking defensemen, but if there ever was two injuries and there wasn't a trade, I think Matthew Robertson gets the call. Zach Jones, obviously, is the first and the seventh defenseman currently. What can we expect from Matthew Robertson? He was a big addition to this pipeline a couple of years back. I believe they used a second rounder on him. Big bodied defenseman. I really thought he'd try and make the team last year and Jones beat him out. So what has he really provided for the Wolfpack so far?
Matthew, I don't want to like be negative about mm-hmm. him. I think that he struggled at the beginning of the season. He did not play a lot at the end of last season because of injury. And I do think that like started him off a little slow to begin the season. He looked great in the last few weeks. But you could tell that there was like, an adjustment to being that first pairing guy. Cause you know, Zach got returned last year and then it was Zach and Ty Emberson always as a first pairing. And then Matthew got hurt and it just seemed like maybe he was gonna struggle to take over. But once he, like, I think maybe 10 games in, he looked a lot more comfortable. He mostly gets paired with Brendan Scanlon, who I think has stepped it up so well. I wasn't sure how he would adjust to taking on that first pairing, but they work really well together. Matthew's great on the power play, especially the last few games that he's played. He's looked much different, even though he's not the number one guy, because that's Mac Hollowell right now. But definitely has improved more than I like envisioned when he started the season a little rough. But I think he definitely could if like Zach got traded or if there was more than one injury. I do think that he would slot in really well. He is similar to Zach, but I think he has like more defense to his game than Zach does, where Zach's like high offense, not as much defense. I think he's like a more even amount, and I think that he would work well with someone like Braden or even like Gus.
Sorry, Greg, were you going to say something? You're just coughing.
Well, I mean, both, frankly.
Okay, go for it.
I'm just always curious about Dylan Garand and how he's doing down in Hartford, because, listen, the Rangers don't need a starting goaltender. They're not going to need a starting goaltender for many years, but it would be great if the Rangers could, at some point in time, have a backup goalie on a cheap entry-level contract that they already have under control. So, wondering minds are just curious how Dylan is doing this year and if he's continuing to trend in the right direction.
He is. I actually I wrote down some things because I really wanted to talk about Dylan because he has impressed me so much this season. He had a like a one-off game the other day, the day that Louis got kicked out of the game for fighting, where like he struggled a bit to adjust to getting thrown in the middle of the game. But in his last five starts, he, even though the team went 3-2, he had a 948 save percentage and a 161 goals against average, and one of those was a shutout. Like, he's just been so stellar. Even when the offense is struggling to produce, because a lot of those games were like 2-1 losses, 3-1 losses, and one of them was an empty net goal. Like, he's just kept them in it to the last second. And I did not envision this when he struggled a lot last year, but I think them giving him that time during the playoffs, because Louis got called up, like, he just took a hold of the starter role and he hasn't looked back. He started more games than Louis this season and he's looked great in all of them.
I have like a stupid question. I don't know if any of us know it. Do we know if Garand works with Benoit Allaire? Like, is that a thing?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I know that Jeff Malcolm is the goalie coach in Hartford. So, but I don't know if like, if someone else, like, if maybe he spends a few weeks, like, I assume that during like development camp, they probably have Benny there with them. Dylan did really well in the prospect games against the Flyers rookies. So I wouldn't be surprised if he worked with Benny while he was preparing for that.
I think the last player I really have any questions on whatsoever is Brett Berard. Is that how you say his last name? Am I correct there?
Yeah.
With Berard, I think he's also one of the guys that might be the next future of the bottom six for the Rangers. Now, I haven't watched a lot of Berard. I'm not familiar, but I just continue to hear his name over and over again, particularly from one of our friends or associates in the chat that we're in, but also from rankings and prospects lists. Can you talk a little bit about his game and if you see him as a bottom sixer, or is he more of an AHL kind of player?
Oh, I absolutely think that he can be a bottom six guy. I was worried a little bit about how he would adjust to like the difference in like schedule going from the NCAA to the AHL, because, you know, they play like twice as many games, I think. But he's just looked so good. He plays both on the PK and on the power play, and he just does all of the little things right, and he's just like Will, physical. I haven't seen him like really fight, but like when I think it was against the Phantoms, almost everything is against the Phantoms, he was getting a little pushy with like the captain of the Phantoms, because that guy is like, He just starts problems with everyone. Like, earlier this season, I think he, like, punched Brennan, like, in the stomach. When from the ice. He was down on the ice, and he just, like, sat up and punched Brennan. But, like, Brett noticed him being, you know, his usual self, and, like, got in his face and was like, you want to go, even though he's, like, 10 years older than him? So, like, I think he has the ability to like hold his own, even though he's a smaller player. He's really fast. I would like to see him play on the left. He's been playing on the right pretty much the whole season, even though he's a natural left winger. I'd like to see him and Brennan swapped, because I think Brennan needs more time on the right, and he just hasn't gotten it in Hartford, and I don't know why. Because Brett obviously can play the right, and I think maybe letting him be in his natural position would help him like settle a bit more, because there are some games where you can tell he's struggling, and a lot of it probably has to do with just the constant line changes. And I know the other day he was like on the third line just because of the way it worked, like there was injuries during the game, so they had to switch things around. But he just, I feel like he'd be more comfortable if he got a little bit of time back on his natural side. But I think he can do what Will did. I think he could maybe, like, in a season or two, probably closer to two, be that steady bottom six guy that the Rangers need, and he would be cheap as well.
The only other thing I got hope is it's a common point Ryan and I talk about on the show a lot, and it's just the lack or and inability of the NHL to want to end their agreement with the CHL in order to allow essentially Canadian teenagers to come to the AHL and develop their games at that level. Do you have any takes whatsoever on that? I don't know if you're pro. I don't know if you're against. I don't know if you think it would help the AHL. I don't know if you think it would hurt the AHL. I have no idea. So I just open the floor to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in support of it. There's a lot of players I wrote about how I think that it would have been much better if Barbashev played in the AHL this year instead of in the queue. I just think that, like, certain players, they don't have any more growing to do in the CHL, and, like, it just makes it difficult for them to, like, make that transition, because they're getting so used to playing against these, like, 16, 17 year olds as 20 year olds. And I think that, I mean, I don't think that Brennan would have, like, not benefited from being in the OHL last year, because, like, he did win a championship. But I think it would have been much nicer if he had gotten time to really, like, adjust in, like, the bottom of the group, instead of, like, he came in, there was not, like, as much depth now that Will's up in the NHL, and he immediately has been a first line winger. Like, he doesn't get, like, any moments to, like, settle himself, and he's always just having to go and go. And if teams were able to have the players come in, like, when they're 19 instead. I know the Firebirds, the Kraken, got special, like approval for Shane Wright to be in the AHL, and he looks much better than he did last year. Like, you could tell that was the right decision for him to be playing against the people in the AHL instead of being in the CHL.
Hope, I really appreciate you taking the time today to talk all about Hartford. There's a lot I just don't know about what's going on with the team. Clearly, you know the players exceedingly well, and I'm excited to see some come up to the Rangers in the coming years here. Could you just, or would you rather want to plug anything you do or where people can follow you?
I mean, I just have my Twitter at Mika Zibinejad. I did want to say there's one player that I'd like to see have an increased role. I don't know what the Rangers are doing right now, but Ryder Korzak has been centering the fourth line in Hartford, and I just do not get it. He is such a good player, and I think, like, they need to switch him. Like, I don't know why they got Anisimov. Like, I really think Ryder could have taken that, like, third, second line center role, and I think it would have been good for his game. I don't know if maybe they know something we don't about like Ryder and his readiness, but I thought that when they brought him and that they wanted him to, like, you know, show his game more, and he does, but, like, he's on, like, the line that basically gets sent out whenever, like, they have a, like, someone is pissing them off. Like, half the time when he's on the ice, Matt Rempe is starting to fight. Like, I think he needs more minutes. I think that they need to put him on, like, special teams, and I don't know why they haven't.
Interesting. I think there's just some guys that don't get the favor of the coaching staff. Maybe that might be part of it, but you would know better than I would. Hope, thanks you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it, and we'll catch you soon on following following the Hartford Wolfpack soon. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
And we're back. All right, nice.
We did good
about the Wolfpack.
I like Hope. I like Hope. I do like how we got tripped up the first time. It's always interesting when you meet new people and you talk to new people and you learn the rhythms,
the cadences
of how they speak.
Yeah.
And Hope a couple times would end a sentence on a high inflection. So I'd think, oh, she's going to add another point. And then you and I would look at each other and just go, Okay, next question. Got it. I get it.
The first one, I felt very bad. I was like, oh, no.
But this, listen, we all have our ticks. Lord knows. I say fuck instead of stopping. That's what I do.
That's what I mean. No further comment on that comment. This is we want to leave a 5-star question on the show. You can go to our Patreon. You can go to the Discord from there and leave a 5-star question. And we will read them on the show every single week we do this now. This is from AZK. Ryan, it seems like Igor shutouts are against the Rangers religion. What is the church's official position on this? Sports, curses, and tropes are the most powerful thing on earth. This is from Cole. With Troches Nona making good Italian...
Was somewhere in there your position?
Because
that's your thing. You read a question and you bleed into an answer immediately. And I sometimes don't know where the question ends and your answer begins.
This is one of my ticks. My position is sports tropes are the most powerful thing on earth. Period. End of story.
So and you think it's a trope that he can't get a shutout right now?
It's been his whole career. He just hates shutouts. It's just part of his game.
Is this the Mets don't have a no hitter thing, but in goalie form?
Sort of like that. I think he had two last year. Could be three. People will correct me, yell at me, whatever. But for the most part, he always lets up like a late goal. The Rangers will be a 5-1. It's like when former Rangers score. It's just going to happen. No Ryan Strome or Frank Vetrano last night, though.
I think they went goalless against the Rangers this year.
That seems impossible. It's from Cole. When Troches Nona makes good Italian food and seeing how Kako is the glue that holds this team together, what meal would Kako's grandma make for the team?
Kako's grandma?
Yeah, Jesus. I have no idea. I don't know. What is Finnish food?
I don't know. Fish?
Yeah, probably fish. I'll say fish.
I have no idea what Finns eat.
Follow up. David asks, is Kako the ultimate glue guy? Wouldn't say he's the ultimate glue guy, but definitely does a lot of dirty work for Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. So that's very helpful.
I would when anyone says glue guy, the first guy that comes to mind is Brian Boyle, because largely a buddy of mine in Savannah who was also a Rangers fan would only refer to Boyle as the glue. He wouldn't say Brian Boyle. He would see him on the screen and go, the glue! And that is how he would interact with the guy. So I don't know if Brian Boyle was the ultimate glue guy or if my brain has just been Pavlov's dogged enough into thinking that.
I wouldn't call Kako a glue guy. I would call him a very solid hockey player. This is from Blind Zebra Looking for Work. Are we sure Jacob Trouba isn't secretly obsessed with Beverly Hills Cop? Also, Who do we think the Godfather is? He's blind. I will give some context. Blind Zebra is asking this because Trouba's name for his child is Axel.
Axel Foley. So,
there we go. I don't know.
Are you a Cop 1 or a Cop 2 guy?
I think I'm a Cop 2 guy.
Yeah, I think that's the popular take, but I think I'm Cop 1.
It's on Netflix now. I've been meaning to rewatch it recently.
I think both of them are, right?
Yeah, I think they both are.
Yeah.
It's from Billy Ratz. There seems to be a subsection of New York Ranger fans that are convinced that the team not only should keep Phil sidelined into the playoffs, a la Vegas and Tampa, the teams of the year past, simply because they can get away with it. Logistical side of that, do you think there's any world where Jury tries to circumvent the cap simply because he can, knowing that the league is on the lookout for this? Okay. First of all, important to say this, Cousin Emily reported today that Philip Hedl, let me get the exact quote from Cousin Emily, Emily Kaplan, former guest of the show. Positive news for New York Rangers, hearing Philip Hedl is en route back to New York. No timetable is set for return to the lineup, but told he made great progress while at home in Chesnia.
So hold on. First, you think it's en route and not en route?
Ooh. Yeah, I do.
Interesting. I don't know. I've always, when I see it, I always think en route, not en route.
I thought it was en route.
I don't know I don't know if it's a difference and it's just how people see it. I've always, in my head, has heard it as en route.
You probably are right. I'm the one that's been statistically wrong on this one.
The chat will let you know. That much I'm sure of.
It'll be like, I'll have like a whole fucking Webster dictionary situation. Here's why you're wrong. Okay, cool. So, look, I don't think Philip Hedl is going to be held out. I think it was an option that I thought the Rangers would likely explore if he couldn't come back. It is seeming, according to reporting from Larry Brooks that had a couple weeks ago, that maybe he's trying to rejoin. First of all, he is rejoining the team, but I would expect him to try and play in early February, and that will kind of determine the entire trade deadline.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Kucherov is the famous example here, right?
Kucherov's very good.
That's a physical injury, and by physical, I mean he had a body part fixed in order to get back into the lineup. he was able to skate, practice with the team, take hits in practice. He was able to do everything humanly possible to be ready for the playoffs without having play in a game. And also, Kucherov is a level of player where you're getting Kucherov regardless of how much run-up to the playoffs you're going to have with him. He's on a different level. Phil Hedel, as much as we love him, is a role player. And he plays a significant role with the New York Rangers. Those role players, in order to understand what the fuck their role is, have to play. And the other part of this with Hedel is, it's a head injury. We don't have any blueprint for what the map forward should look like for Phil Hedel. You could keep him out of the lineup, keeping him out of the lineup until the playoffs and then expecting him to come back in and fit somewhere in the bottom or middle six. It's both unfair to Hedel. It's also unfair to the guy you traded for, where you're now disrupting two different sets of lines for the sake of one player. If we knew lockstep where Phil Hedel was going to slot into this lineup come playoff time, I'd at least hear the argument. I have no idea where Phil Hedel slots in. I have no idea what his wingers should look like. I know you're not going to break up Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere, where if you remember, Ryan, that was the line Hedel was playing on before he got hurt. So you can't break that up. I don't know how Mika Zibanejad is looking with whatever winger we need to put him with in order to get his game going. So I don't think when Kucherov comes in the lineup, you know exactly where he's playing, you know exactly who he's playing with, you know exactly what to get with him. Phil Hedel himself is such a big question mark in terms of what we can expect from him when he returns to the ice, how long he's going to be on the ice, and who he's going to be on the ice with. You cannot leave those questions until the playoffs to figure out what the hell you're going to do with it. That is irresponsible on a cataclysmic level.
Totally agree. I have no. You did all the talking there. Congratulations. This next question. Tag to Seamus asks: is Panarin, Trocheck, Laf the garlic butter baguette line? Stop it. Just stop. Fresh bread component includes Trocheck unique Italian influence. Sounds good to say and eat. The line is filling the net, and everyone's excited to see it coming out to the table over the boards.
Guys, line names make themselves. Stop forcing it. It'll either come or it doesn't. You know what I'm saying?
We all tried to make some line name, and the line name still hasn't happened. So it hasn't gone.
When it shows its face, we all will know, and that's
chicken
what
parm
we will
line,
call
everybody.
It.
That's it. I just like chicken parm. I just want to say chicken parm. Adam Furlong asks, imagine you were starting an NHL team and you could build around, this is really a dynasty draft he's asking us to do. You could build around this any set of teammates with the objective of winning a Stanley Cup for the next 5 years. Where does Fox plus Igor, Laf, or Bread rank among the NHL rosters? Figure that Makar MacKinnon goes first, McDavid, Draisaitl are one and two in some order.
Yeah, I mean, Makar MacKinnon and whatever the third Avalanche you want is going to be one. And I think McDavid
I think
and
he's
any
really just
two
saying
other
a pair. So one and two. That's it. So like McDavid, Draisaitl is one, a pair. Makar MacKinnon is one.
Oh, okay. That's tough. Because
I would say it's Panarin and Fox. Those are the two.
Yeah, but like, where would you take them? Would I take them before? Like, am I really taking them before Barkov and Matt Tkachuk? I don't think so.
Are you taking them before Hughes and Bratt?
Probably. It's tough. It's in that area, though. But like, are you really? If you know you can still get 3 years out of Sidney Crosby, you really going to stay away from Sidney Crosby and whoever you want to
take on that? And that really brings you down.
I know. But Crosby Gensel is on the same line.
It's definitely later. I would say Adam somewhere in the 5 to 8 range here.
Probably. I mean, there are a lot of good. There are really bad teams with two good players.
Dallas has a couple of interesting ones.
And I know Vancouver's not a bad team, but Quinn and Elias Pettersson is going before Fox and Igor or Panarin.
It's from Jets Rangers, and this is something we talked about earlier, so we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, Craig, but at what point do we officially become concerned about Keandre Miller? He's not only stopped progressing, he's seemingly regressing. His inconsistency and mistake-filled play are not the problem for the team, but certainly a problem.
Listen, I'll just answer this in terms of regression. You cannot identify regression in a fewer than 1 year sample. This is either, right now, this is a slump. If we will not be able to say his game has regressed until ample time has gone by to say it's regressed, which is at the end of next season. If Keandre Miller continues to play like this for 18 more months, Yeah, his game's regressed. That's a problem. Right now, it's a slump. Saying it's regression is outrageous. You're just not even looking at a big enough sample size to use that term.
This is from Allie, Rangers. If you were going to shake up the D pairs, what would your new pairs be? I'd be curious to see Foxy Gus, but I feel like that leaves pretty cringe options as the bottom two pairings, since it would be sort of sacred to put Key and Lindy together, or Schneid's, though I can't lie, it'd be super entertaining, Trouba and Schneid's playing together, baby Trouba and adult Trouba, of course. What's y'all take?
I do like the idea of Schneider Trouba, not just because you get adult Trouba, adult Schneider and baby Trouba playing next to each other.
Yep.
It's tough because you know what's crazy is I never know who to put with Lindgren.
That's the weirdest part for me. It's because I just feel like Lindgren Fox is the one that's really inseparable.
Yeah, I don't really want Lindgren Trouba. And I guess Gus Lindgren could work and look good, but I'd be so much more entertained if I was able to put Gus with other players.
The mixing matching is really kind of limited here. I think Miller Schneider is something I've never even thought about one time, once. And maybe that's a go-to. Maybe give that a shot. Gus Trouba, Schneider?
Miller, we deserve a long Fox Miller run. We haven't gotten it. It's never happened. No time like now in order to do it. And I think Gus Lindgren would be fine, though kind of boring. I just kind of really want Schneider Trouba, and I know it'll never happen because, heaven forbid, two right-handed defensemen play next to each other. But, yeah, it would entertain. I got to tell you, I said this on Twitter during the Kings game as well. I get that there are other defensemen that should be on PP2 over Jacob Trouba because they are more creative and bring more offense to that unit. Piss missile from the top Jacob Trouba is my favorite Jacob Trouba.
He's the most fun Jacob Trouba, other than trained Jacob Trouba.
I want that man to stand at the blue line and hit howitzers and see if he can knock someone out with one of them. It's so fun. I love every second of it. If we ever go to war, I don't need a super sophisticated airplane. Just give me Jacob Trouba, a hockey stick, and some missiles, and I will hit whatever 50-mile radius I intended to hit. Probably miss it a little bit, but I will laugh every second that man is just hitting rough shot out of an airplane.
Greg, BSBOT, Greg Kaplan laughs at war.
I know. You don't think Saving Private Ryan's a romantic comedy?
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Interesting. You're not watching
good,
the right
good
movie.
Jokes when I was in school, though. Great jokes because my name is Ryan. Awesome.
Saving your privates, baby.
Yeah, all the time. This is from Paranoid Android. Has there ever been a player who needed to spend their All-Star break traveling internationally to get absolutely peppered in a ridiculous skills competition, an exhibition game less than Igor Shesterkin? What are the chances he tells the league to fuck off and no-shows all at the All-Star game to get some much-needed rest and relaxation?
We should probably also say, since we haven't said at any point here, congratulations to Vincent Trocheck. Much deserved.
He easily does not want to go, for sure.
Nobody does. The NHL All-Star... Listen, I've done this rant many times. But the NHL All-Star Weekend is the least fun of all the All-Star Weekends because you're not even going to a fun locale. You don't even get to enjoy where the... Does anyone want to... Where is it this year? Toronto, I think?
It's Toronto, yeah.
Who the fuck wants to spend a January weekend in Toronto?
Not even people in Toronto.
Not even people in Toronto! Like the NBA All-Star Weekend, they go to fun places. What is it, Vegas? The most point?
Yeah, and the NBA All-Star, like everybody, there's a lot more coverage in the league, and everybody's there, period. End of story.
Baseball's All-Star Weekend, it's at least in the summer, so if you end up in fucking Colorado, whatever, it's in the summer. The Home Run Derby is really the only thing keeping that monstrosity alive as well. But most guys, they get that it's a paycheck, it's a bonus for them, they go out there, they're in warm weather, they get to bring their family, that's nice. You're just miserable, cold, and in a hotel for most of All-Star Weekend in the NHL. It's awful. Who wants to do this?
Next question is from David again. If New York Ranger fans took half their negative energy at every win, loss, or day off and putting into learning Latin on Duolingo, could we bring back the Roman Empire? great question.
Yes. Truth. Boy, could we. Yeah, I don't know, man. Sports do feel more negative now, right? Right? Am I crazy?
You're not crazy, and we talk about it a lot. A lot.
It didn't always used to be like this. Every now and then, they used to be fun.
I try and have fun with them still. It's hard. I fight the good fight. I think a lot of people still do have fun. I think we just see more negative than a lot of situations.
Yeah, I know. The negative voice is always the one that carry the loudest, even though they're usually the minority opinion. But like,
I had one guy, I'm going to give him attention. Fuck it, I don't care. I had one guy over the weekend. He just was, you know, chirping me, whatever. I was like, thanks, dad, or whatever it was. And then as soon as I said that, I got added like 19 more times by a total psychopath. I was like,
yeah,
why did I give him attention one time? I'm such an idiot.
Yep. Nope. It's terrible. Now the way I do it, that's different from you. There's this one guy, his name's Turk. I'm going to fucking name drop him. I don't care.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Turk is this old miserable fuck who coaches gym. And I get a kick out of it. Every time he comments something, it's always negative and pissy and miserable. I just go, Turk, you old son of a bitch, can't believe you're alive. Like, you have to react over the top to it and just pretend to be happy negative. You know, someone comes in your comments and you're just you slide dog. How did you fucking turn a computer on today?
Do you want to do a thing where, do that meme where it's like a bunch of guys looking at, like, it's a point of view, you walk into a bar, like, hey, there he is. Who let that guy in here? Yeah, and I'll find that meme, and every single time Turk responds to us, we just send him that from now.
No, I think one time I was like, you don't say, you, what did you do? I usually hit him with sandbag and son of a bitch, just like in a real Austin 316 kind of way. He never learns. It's not like he even follows me. So he goes out of his way to find these tweets that he hates and then comments on him about how much he hates them. And every time I'm just like, Tag, I missed you.
Last night I tweeted, you know, the ESPN Plus commercial we talk a lot about. I was like, I'd rather watch that on repeat than the rest of this game. And, you know, making a joke, just having fun, because the Rangers were down 2-0, whole thing.
Yep.
Turk this morning just like, and you were wrong. I was like, what?
And that's why
you enjoyed the game?
You just gotta go, Turk, you fucking dick swinging bitch bastard. Yeah, how's the family? Did I leave you again? It's like Turk, are you my dad? Did you get the milk? Like, you have to turn it around on it confuses the shit out of him. He can't have multiple thoughts at the same time.
That's amazing.
It's too fucking simple. I want, for the record, no one else, if I catch any of you ganging up on this poor old bastard,
don't do it. Do not.
I will get angry at you. However, I need you all to know how much I enjoy it every time he comes in my mentions. Ryan, when I say it makes my day, I'm not lying.
He's never going to hear this, so that's the great news.
Never going to hear it. But I need Turk, I think it's Stevens, whatever the fuck your last name is.
Extra dox him.
Turk, I just need you to know, man, you bring so much happiness into my life by being a miserable prick.
Next question. This is from Brett Lay. The Knicks are 8-2 in their last 10. Is the mystery solved now?
It always was, man. Yeah. We talked about this multiple times before.
It's Panarin bread.
Mm.
Is it fair to say we have a Mika Zibanejad problem? Yep. Listen to the opening of this podcast.
Yeah. I am reflective enough to know that I think I'm probably his harshest critic.
You're in the top five. Yeah. Just to finish his question, he says that, you know, I don't really, anytime against a seed that's similar in skill or better, he's just nowhere to be found. I don't think we can win a championship with him. I will give Mika Zibanejad one piece of credit here. He, on the second half of that Pittsburgh series, became a man possessed when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. And he was unbelievable.
Good, Ryan, when the Eden's good, it's fucking Vegas buffet.
It's unbelievable.
My only complaint is it's never good for long enough.
That's it.
But I also will say this. I have no interest in trading him, and I think the Rangers can win a Stanley Cup with him. I know they can win a Stanley Cup with him as long as he's Mika Zibanejad. I'm critical of Mika Zibanejad because I know how great he is, and I want him to be great all the time.
I'm skipping some questions because some people asked multiple, but this is from Gen W and Twent. That's definitely wrong.
Oh, Jesus Christ almighty.
For Ryan to redeem himself or dig a bigger hole, since he's a Philly man now, can you pronounce these Philadelphia neighborhoods? I can do the first one. It's Conshohocken. After that, I'm pretty screwed, I'll be honest with you. So it's Yeadon, Lower Moimensing? That's wrong.
Oh,
that's boy. Wrong. Moimensing? Moimensing. Moimensing.
I don't even know if it's a Jewish neighborhood, but you're making old Jewish mothers cry right now.
Probably. And Bala Sinwood? Sinwood?
That's wrong. There's no chance.
There's no chance.
You make letters sound foreign to me. I don't know how else to describe the sensation where in my head I know you're reading certain English letters,
yeah.
But you're making them sound like something I've never seen.
This last two more questions, actually, or three. Winston the Golden Retriever asks, bark, 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 bark. Before Ryan watches Miracle, I need to know if either of you have seen the document on the Danbury Thrashers, the Untold Volume Crime and Penalties. I have not seen it yet.
I have seen that.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's fine. I think it's a little overhyped. I think it's important, everybody listening to this, if you like the Untold series, please do me a favor and understand that the story they are presenting is probably nowhere close to what the real story actually is. In order for the Untold story series to get their subjects to sit down with them, they give them a certain level of executive producing power, which means it is a sanitized version of a really good story that you could potentially get somewhere else. I appreciate that it exists because it makes people ask the right questions about something that happened in my neck of the woods, but it is an extremely sanitized version. And it's not anything like the old school 30 for 30s, which I think you can catch the entire library on ESPN Plus.
Live sports.
Live sports! I hear the song as soon as I read the letters. And then I see Peyton fucking Manning doing Peyton Manning
Tom
shit.
Tom Brady, Banana Land guy winking at me.
Some American gladiators looking real gladiatory.
The biceps. Oh, I hate it. Matty Jack asks, I'm now a believer in moral wins. Based on the team's positioning, I think it's far more important the team be playing structurally sound even if they lose 2-1 rather than win a 6-4 boat race game. Is this a crazy take?
I just want to make sure I'm clear here, Matty Jack. You'd rather watch a game in which your team plays well instead of a game in which your team plays terribly, regardless of the outcome of the game. Do I have that question right?
You know what he's gonna do here, right? this final question is from Phil S. It seems that over the years, the trade deadline guys that most fans haven't heard of, Kopp, Vatrano, Mott, outperform the ones that the fans have known of, Kane, Eric Staal, etc. Who are some of the off the radar guys that we should be paying attention to? I'm just tired of the Tarasenko, Henrique, Duclair, and now Daniel Sprong chat.
Well,
I haven't really heard of a lot of Sprong. Have you?
No, because you did, Ryan. Remember when I did the rant during the Red Wings Leafs game and there was a Ranger scout in attendance and people were like, it must be Daniel Sprong. And it wasn't. The Ranger scout is doing his job. Sprong is
the one. Duclair and Tarasenko are the only two I think are even probable, and I still don't think those are the
favorites. I don't think they're probable very much at all. Again, think of the role in which the New York Rangers are looking to acquire a guy for. You're looking for a bottom six right-handed center who could probably also play on the wing. It's a very specific role that the Rangers want to fill. I think Nick Dowd is going to cost more than people want to give up in trade. But that's the type of player the Knicks are looking for Jordan Clarkson. That they want Jordan Clarkson. If they trade for Alec Burks again, I swear to God, what are we doing? But the Rangers are looking at something in the Nick Dowd aisle. I've heard people say Sean Monahan. It's not going to be him. His defensive metrics this year have been a lot worse than people want to give him credit for. He's been defensively sound in previous years, but it's not happening this year. So I don't think the Rangers are looking at anything there. They essentially want Jimmy VC super version for their bottom six. I don't have the name off the top of my head, but like Nicholas Obi Kubel is a guy that the Rangers will target because he's not going to cost much. It won't be much more than a fourth round pick, and he's having a really strong two-way year. And it's not like the Capitals, even though they're in a better position than they were at this point, that they expected, they got him off waivers. So that's free money that you'd be giving the Capitals to get an Obi Kubel for your roster. It's someone in that form. If people thinking the Rangers are going to go out and make a big splash, they don't have as many assets as you think, first of all. They need to start making some of these first round picks that they've been trading away in previous years. They kind of need to keep their bullets. And I think they're going to do that at this deadline. They're going to shop low. They're going to go to dollar store. They're going to get their shit, and they're going to be a fine team come playoff time.
That's the podcast. We'll be back later this week, probably Wednesday or Thursday after the Tuesday game, because the Tuesday game's at 10:30 and we're not doing it afterwards.
Oh,
so.
My God. Who do we even play tomorrow?
The Sharks.
Oh, boy. David Quinn revenge game. Here we go.
That's it. So we'll be back with BSBOT on our Patreon later this week. Otherwise, we'll be back next week. Katie Bakes still confirmed, Gregory? Cool. And I'm going to try and get Emily Kappen for the week after. So we will see that.
Cousin Emily
couldn't come on the show. Hopefully. I haven't really asked her. I'm going to ask her after this. So I'm going to try, though.
Also, I just want to point out, because Madame Fox, Madame Fox called us out on Twitter the other days because I apparently respond to hearing her name in the exact same way every single time on this podcast. All I have to say about that is I'm not explaining myself and I'm going to keep doing it.
Is that, did I miss that call out?
You sure did.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, no. Madame Fox.
Pay better attention.
I've got some stuff going on. All right. Well, I'll see you guys later. Love you guys. Bye. Hey, it's the end of the show where I thank our NHL Insider Club members for being a premium sponsors of the show for a very, very long time and keep this thing going. But something that is really, really funny, we've had a lot of scoops recently in the chat, had some big ones today, honestly, as I'm recording this. And what's really interesting about the Insider's chat is that sometimes I don't get to it first. Others internet sleuth or have weird connections and something comes up and we have answers very quickly. And it's just funny how the community has evolved into this incredible source and wealth of information that I could have never even imagined. It's a fun time. So without further ado, let me talk about some of those people. It's funny, I keep saying without further ado. I think I really enjoy that in my repertoire of things to say. Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Adam Cortullo, Adam Keach, Alex Flynn, Alex Carter, Amber Cohensberger, Andrew Ronner, Anthony Gray, Anthony Montoro, Anthony Tenegretta, Ari Zanger, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Bill Olson, Bill Rattel, Brandon Latkos, Brandon Magnum, Brett Granger, Brett McGinnis, Brian Doherty, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Brian Farrell, a lot of Brians, Cassidy Rollman, CJ, Chris Finelli, CJ Haru, CJ Selwagen, Conrad P. Demish, Daniel Delaney, Daniel Dizan, David Naradin, David Siegel, DJ Banana Jazz, Dylan Brett Schneider, Eric Stagg, Garrett Reynes, Greg, Gretzky McFly, Harrison Hasko, Hello Vanilla, Hip Hip 89, Jack Bagley, Jack Grogan, Jake Keith, James Masker, Jarian Marquez, Jason Stumer, Jason Zabrowski, Jimmy Mack, John Hardesty, Johnny Shea, Thunder Jundercrock, Jordan, Josh Kestenbaum, Josh White, Christopher Florida, Cried or Die, Leszek Gronowski, Lee Plummer, Lou Giordano, Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kine, Meatball the Cat, Mike Koenig, Mike Bucklaw, Mike Mancuzu, Mike Pasternak, Neil Hanafy, Neil Grover, Nicholas Palms, Nicholas DiNicola, Pascal Perrier, Paul J. Smith, Pavel, Phoenix Edition, PJ Sisparo, Randy Tesser, Ryan Watch Miracle, yes, Swinegar, The Drop BK, Tommy Sequire, Tommy Tadeshi, Tommy Tony O'Neill, Tony Gregory, Tony from having the original supporter, Vinny Bracco, Will Spector, and Winston the Golden Retriever, now active in the Insider Chat as well. Woo! Just a couple of terrible weeks as a Ranger fan. Awful. Games are not fun as much. I'm really hoping they turn things around. Shocker. Shocker surprise, everybody. Really strange. I'm going to do an interesting ask at the end of this podcast. If you're still here, you're a psychopath. You knew that anyway. So you might know this. I watch a lot of sumo. Yep. That's right. I watch a lot of sumo. I went in Japan. There's a tournament every month and a half or so, five a year. It works a little bit like European soccer. There's divisions, whole thing. Would you guys want me to do like a 30-minute sumo primer? Because the tournament's, we're already in day 10 here. It's there's 15 days. It's a lot going on. Pretty exciting tournament. Not the best, but pretty exciting. I might do a post-tournament recap or something like that. Let me know if you'd enjoy something weird like that. I'll record it and put it up for you because I might want to do it anyway. Anyway, back to the Rangers for just a moment. This break can't come soon enough for them. I think a lot of the guys, we didn't really talk about this today. I think a lot of guys are playing through sickness and injury. There's not a lot of excuses to be made. The coaching staff has to do a little bit of a better job as well. Still first in the Metro. The lead is gone for the most part, but there's something off, and it's more than just coaching. I can't put my finger on it. All right. See you guys later for this week for BSBOT. Let's please beat David Quinn and the Sharks. Otherwise, I will go insane. Love you guys. Bye.